Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Tuesday afternoon, August 13th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The cost of college can be overwhelming, but there may be a way to cut a better deal. We'll learn more in our next segment. But right now, the latest report on producer prices leads today's economic data. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And maybe you heard the Ann Cates business report where they talked about how today was the appetizer on the inflation front before tomorrow's main course. And as far as you're concerned, Paul, how's that appetizer tasting today?
That appetizer tastes fine, but we're looking forward to the main course tomorrow. CPI is expected to come in at a 3% annual rate 12-month, eyeing a 0.2% change from the month before. What we see in these numbers is really some caution on the part of people, the surveyed people. This is a Bloomberg survey, and there's just a little bit of reticence to say all inflation is all clear. They're still looking at inflation coming down slowly, but the trend is lower, and that really is important for markets.
And then when we're talking about inflation leveling off, I mean, obviously prices are substantially higher than they were in 2019. And that's just how inflation works. I mean, when inflation was crushed in the early 80s, the price you paid for something in 1985 was a lot higher than it was in 1977. And we don't want to live in a world of deflation. The thing that makes deflation possible is terrifying. You don't want that. But when it comes to a business deciding how much to charge on a wholesale level, you know, what are the factors there, and when do they say, well, we're not going to raise prices nearly as much compared to the month before?
Yeah, I mean, when you're seeing that happening, and that's especially going on right now in goods markets, not so much in services. So insurance costs are still rising, healthcare costs are still rising, but goods prices are actually falling from one month to the next. And that's it's not a good sign or a bad sign, but it's offsetting the increase in services costs that we're still seeing in some areas of the economy, and giving the Fed the green light, we think, to cut interest rates in September, which is what the economy wants to see in order to increase the availability of credit and the cost of credit going forward. We think that will drive a recovery next year.
And then, of course, the Fed, they look at the CPI and the PPI numbers, but they have the PCE, the personal consumption expenditure figure. And then once all the numbers come in, the CPI and the PPI, the analysts can do a pretty good job of guessing of what that PCE number will be.
Yes, that's right. The PCE comes in at the end of the month. The CPI is the one in the middle of the month, and that's sort of the homework that you do to get the right answer at the end of the month.
And then when it comes to the cutting interest rates in September, it seems like it's now almost fait accompli, Paul, that they're going to cut in September. But the question now, I guess, switches from are they going to cut to will it be a quarter point or half a point?
Yeah, we think a half a point. That seems to be the market consensus as well. Is there a sense that the Fed might have waited a little too long to cut rates? Maybe. But the labor market is still in pretty good shape, even though the report we had at the end of July and the beginning of August was a little weaker than expected. So the Fed's not in bad shape, but a 50 basis point cut, a half a point cut, would really help the markets here going forward. And then we think another quarter in November, another quarter beyond that in December. So a full percentage point lower in the prime rate by the end of this year. That should help the economy.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, there may be some wiggle room when it comes to the cost of college.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The skyrocketing cost of college has many families searching for ways to reduce the financial hit. Let's get some insight from Mark Horner, wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Wheaton, the website fairhavenwealth.com. Mark, thanks for joining me today. And does that mean if I am the parent of a college-aged or soon-to-be college-aged student, I got to put on the aviator shades, slick back the hair, put on the sharp suit, and then go into the bursar's office at the college of their choice and say, show me the money?
So that's one way to go, although it doesn't have to be an episode of The Sopranos as part of your negotiation strategy. And I think it absolutely has to start with really finding the right fit for your student, and not leading with providing your tax returns and your investment statements. And so to me, that's a silver lining of all these problems that the government has had with the FAFSA system, the college process really should not start with showing the colleges that you want to attend or that you're interested in all of your financial information. It's much better to go into that process thinking about the global fit for your particular student, and then you hit them hard with the negotiation strategies.
And what's interesting is that you've already demonstrated, or the college has already demonstrated, they are interested in your student. They believe that your son or daughter is going to be a worthwhile addition to their campus community, because as part of the application process, above and beyond the standardized tests, you have to write an essay, you have to talk about all your interests, you got to talk about what you want to do when you get to college. So clearly they want your kid there, and it's just like going, it's almost like buying a car, going to the salesman. Do you want the sale or not? Do you want my child to contribute to your community or not? And maybe that could be the jumping off point.
Rob, you're hitting so many nails on the head right now with what you just said. That where the scales turn in the favor of the family or the student is when they get that letter of acceptance. Because as you said, that's exactly right. The schools have revealed that yes, they want you as much as you might want them. And that's the time for families to really strike on this idea of whittling down and getting that first offer. And it's important for families to remember letters of acceptances and whatever financial aid package comes along with those letters. That's an offer. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with counter-offering to try and get that number down. But that's exactly the time when the scales have tipped in your favor. But it's really important to have done the legwork in advance to make sure that you're as informed as you can be about what the true cost of education at schools that you might be interested in actually are, because it can be very murky and difficult to assess just from a website.
Now, there are so many angles on the continued difficulties of getting out the FAFSA form in a timely fashion. And yes, it does cause a great deal of stress for families. But what is this doing for colleges as well? And can you make that uncertainty on the college side of the equation work for you?
Yeah, so right. There is a lot of uncertainty that's created by the delays that the government's had with getting that form updated. I think though there's a silver lining in that story, and that is to not lead with showing, like your car dealer example, not lead with your tax returns. So instead, you can go to most any college website or Google financial aid calculator, FAFSA estimators, and you can punch in information in 8 minutes. I did it right before I came on today. 8 minutes to get a sense of what it is, what aid it is that your family might qualify for. And don't lead with the financial information to the college or university. Wait for that time to negotiate. And that's when you start talking about, hey, what can we do in merit awards? It's important to understand the difference between merit and financial aid. But again, not leading with the financials.
Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Wheaton, the website fairhavenwealth.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Starbucks responds to falling sales with a change at the top.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Starbucks has dumped its CEO in favor of the top executive at Chipotle. Let's get the details and what's behind the move from Richard Collings, reporter for Axios in New York. Richard, thank you for joining us today. It seems like you have some of the classic ingredients for a CEO shakeup. You have a business with performance that's slowing down and an activist investor fighting their way onto the board. And when you put those two things together, the CEO, more often than not, is out the door.
That's exactly right. Although today's announcement was a surprise move by Starbucks, they did take everyone by a bit of surprise. I mean, investors love this move, though. Brian Nickel is a great choice.
And Brian Nickel comes from Chipotle, and not only does he come from Chipotle, but he has a reputation for turning that particular restaurant around.
Exactly. He's been on board since 2018. I mean, he not only knows how to create value and grow revenue, he also knows how to manage a company through crisis. I mean, he took the company through the pandemic. I mean, when he took over the company, mind you, the stock was trading between $7 and $10 a share back then. I mean, now it's at $55. It was higher up even towards $70 per share. It's had a little bit of issues, but overall, he has a sterling record there.
Now, he succeeds a CEO who was handpicked by Howard Schultz, who was the person responsible for Starbucks' explosive growth around the world. What were some of the things that were working against him?
Well, competition in China, competition in the U.S., operations. Anytime you're a big, mature company, it really comes down to operations, I feel like. There's always the specter of new competition. Certainly, there have been new entrants in the coffee. I mean, even on the independents, there's been more competition even from independents. So, just it's a very competitive segment coffee.
And then when it comes to some of the headwinds in the Starbucks coffee business, you talk about issues the company was having in China, but it also seems that price-sensitive customers, if you're really dealing with higher prices everywhere and you want to save money here or there, I guess the first thing to go is the Starbucks run, and Starbucks has to adapt to that.
Exactly. There are cheaper competitors out there. That's what they're going to need to figure out in part. Is how to keep consumers coming, offering them value while trying to maintain sales margins, all those kind of things.
And then when it comes to growth, I mean, would there be any retrenchment? I mean, I think we've seen some retail operations that opened up a lot of locations, and then they started to revise their guidance downward and start closing locations. Would Starbucks consider that, or do they need that retail space?
Yes, I do think Starbucks needs to look at retrenching and doing a reorganization of the business. This wouldn't be the first time that it would attempt such. I mean, it did overexpand, and I'm kind of alluding, many years ago, it went through this period where it had closed locations and it had to rethink its entire retail footprint, and it may have to do some of that here again.
Richard Collings, reporter for Axios in New York, thanks for joining us today to talk about the change at the top of Starbucks. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, the focus is on women taking group trips or going it alone.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. It appears a final route is set for protest marches during next week's Democratic National Convention. Former President Trump revisits the attempt on his life in Pennsylvania during a social media conversation with billionaire Elon Musk. Travel Tuesday, a look at the growing popularity of travel by women in groups as well as those going solo. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 324 points, NASDAQ up 382, S&P 500 up 79, 83 degrees right now under mostly sunny skies at 1231, topping our news at the half hour. The Democratic National Convention protest path will remain the same after a federal judge ruled City Hall will not have to change the approved area for next week's convention. The judge says the current route abides by the First Amendment and protects protesters plus onlookers from safety concerns. But 25,000 protesters, most of them centering on the Israel-Hamas war, are expected to make an appearance. President Trump was speaking with Elon Musk on the social media platform X, formerly Twitter, yesterday, with one of the topics centering on Trump's recovery after the shooting at a rally in Pennsylvania a month ago.
Just shy of a month after the assassination attempt on him, and after vowing in his convention speech to never share details again, former President Donald Trump talked at length about it in a conversation with Elon Musk.
What was it like for you?
Not pleasant. I didn't know I had that much blood. The doctors later told me that the ear is a place that is a very bloody place.
Trump also said he's preparing to go back to Butler, Pennsylvania in October.
CBS News White House correspondent Ed O'Keefe reporting the live stream had been delayed for about 40 minutes because of technical difficulties, which Musk attributed to hacking. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Tom Hanlon, National Investment Strategist with the U.S. Bank Wealth Management Group in Minneapolis. Tom, thank you for joining us today. And when that PPI number came in. I have to get all my acronyms straight, Tom. When the PPI number came in this morning, indicating that inflation was below trend, below what analysts had expected, I imagined traders looked like Flounder from Animal House saying, oh boy, this is going to be great because an interest rate cut is definitely in the cards for September now.
Yeah, good afternoon, Rob. Happy to be here with you. That was a pretty constructive reading on the inflation front on the producer side. We'll get consumer tomorrow. But in general, you know, inflation's decelerating. We've got interest rate cuts kind of looming on the horizon, and corporate earnings are trending higher. We think that's still a pretty constructive backdrop for equity prices to move higher.
Now, how does that change the expectations for the CPI figure tomorrow?
I think what investors are looking for is, you know, you can have month-to-month, you know, blips in those, you know, those data points. But in general, is inflation still on its trajectory back towards the Fed's target 2% rate? It doesn't have to get there right away. But is it showing a continued deceleration, and therefore does that set the Fed up? The Fed doesn't have to get to 2% to start cutting rates. It's more they can kind of ease off the gas pedal a little bit, thinking that they're getting closer to their objective without seeing the labor market really get kind of out of whack as well, with, you know, potentially unemployment rising or what have you. So we're looking for kind of a sequence of inflation prints that just tell us that we're on track and projecting out to the Fed's target.
Right. It seems like the old saying goes, it takes two to tango. And one side of this equation, inflation, appears to be solved or close to it. But now the debate and the concern and the questions all shift over to the labor market and whether or not that below trend report we saw for July, if that's the beginning of something or just a one-off.
Yeah, there could be some seasonal noise to some of these month-to-month labor market reports. I think, in general, you're seeing a labor market come back into better balance. You're seeing the job openings get closer to where they were pre-COVID, so February 2020, in terms of the sectors and the job openings per sector. So, you know, again, that alleviates some of the pressure on wages, which helps alleviate some of the pressure on inflation, which lets the Fed think that they're getting back down towards their target on the inflation side. So they're intertwined, Rob, but again, it seems like we still have a positive but decelerating labor market, similar to what we see on the inflation side.
The VIX is plummeting from the highs that we saw a little over a week ago, back towards that kind of calm that we saw in the 12 to 14 range. And the markets were not exactly volatile for a year leading up to what we saw last week. And how does volatility enter the equation? And then how do investors shake it off?
Yeah, we kind of see it in three phases, Rob. So we had an event over the last couple of weeks. We saw the weaker labor market print, and we saw some weakness in the manufacturing data. And then we saw some news out of the Bank of Japan that led to some
some action in the capital markets. And so you kind of assess the event, and then you look underneath that and say, did anything change in the fundamentals for corporate America and for revenues and for profits? And as we're 90%+ of the way through second quarter earnings, and not only is it not the worst case scenario, but in general, corporate America is performing at or above expectations. And so I think that sets us up for like one of these dips that you see. It's normal in markets to get a 10%-ish decline in a market any given year. We thought that was a nice buying opportunity for investors to have to kind of get back to their target allocation.
Tom Hanlon, National Investment Strategist with the U.S. Bank Wealth Management Group in Minneapolis. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, the spotlight this afternoon is on trips for women.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. And in this segment, the emphasis is on women, whether they're heading out solo or in a group. We welcome in Cindy Richards, Editor-in-Chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And I would imagine, these tour groups or people who go in a group or go solo, what are the circumstances that lead women just to get up and go?
Well, I travel solo a lot, and I see a lot of other women traveling solo. It's increasing. I think women have decided that they don't need to wait for someone else. They can just, if they want to go somewhere, if they got a bucket list trip or they just need to get away, they can go ahead and do it. And the travel industry has responded in kind. There are tour companies that will do women-only tours. One big reason that women will choose to do group tours is for safety, which is always the biggest concern of women traveling alone. But the cruise companies have gone big into solo travel. The cruise ships are building solo cabins. You may remember the bad old days of single supplements. And if you wanted to take a cruise by yourself, you had to pay an additional fee, maybe 20% additional or even 50% additional, because cruise companies price things based on two people in a cabin.
And so whether you're going on a girls' trip or you just want to get away and have some time for yourself, what are some things you need to remember if you are going either by yourself or with some friends?
Well, I think, going with your friends is fabulous. I do girls' trips every year with my college roommates. We have a lovely time. My daughter travels all the time with her friends. So that's always lovely. I think the bigger issues are when you're traveling solo as a woman and how to stay safe. And what I always recommend to people is to try it before you buy it. So you don't want to be halfway into a $10,000 trip on the other side of the world to find out that you don't really like traveling by yourself. Take a weekend, go to a nearby town, go up to Milwaukee for a weekend, practice having dinner in a nice restaurant by yourself. Do you need to bring a book? Do you need to bring a journal? Are you okay just sitting there and people watching? Find out what you're comfortable with as a solo traveler before you book the big trip to take yourself.
Right. You'd rather learn the lesson the hard way at, let's say, Mater's on 3rd Street in Milwaukee versus making that discovery in some cafe in Timbuktu.
Exactly. And when you're ready to do it, I think taking a tour is a really good first step, because that means that you're automatically with a group of other people. You automatically are going to feel safer because the tour guides are going to take you to the safer places, and there's always going to be people around who will keep you safe. So I think that's a really great way to start. And, there are any number of tour companies that are now focused on solos. And it's not, we think mostly solo travel is retirees, women who maybe their husband died or their husband doesn't want to travel anymore, and they're getting out and doing it. But increasingly, there are tour companies that are focused on young people. We have a whole story on She Buys Travel about tips for traveling solo as women. And there's a story about Contiki Tours, which focuses on 18 to 35-year-olds. G Adventures is another one. They do great tours, but they're focused on younger people. So it's a great way to meet other people from around the world and make friends that last a lifetime.
And that you bring up a very good point in that you could have someone who is embarking on their professional career. Maybe they're just a couple of years out of school. They have a job that pays them real money. And why not go out and get the memorable vacation out of the way before the obligations of career and potentially family take over?
Well, especially and as housing prices are so expensive, you know, young people are saying, look, I'm going to go live rather than try to save up and buy a house that maybe I can't afford in that price range or at these interest rates. But they can't afford a $10,000 vacation or a $5,000 vacation. Some of these tours are remarkably low cost. Considering everything that you get for it. But make sure you read the fine print and you know what's included. You don't want to get there and find out that, you know, it's really only three breakfasts for the week that are covered and you've got to come up with the cash for everything else you want to eat while you're on some other country for a week.
Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief, SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday and still to come an update on the Middle East war and its potential fallout for the U.S.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The U.S. is warning that a significant attack on Israel could be launched by Iran, possibly this week. Let's update the situation on the Middle East with Jeff McCausland, CBS Radio National Security Consultant. Jeff, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. And will this response be similar to the Iran's attack on Israel we saw a couple of months ago with drones trying to attack the country, but they were easily shot down, an attack that was more or less designed to show off as opposed to actually inflict military damage?
I think that particular attack, Rob, was kind of the baseline that the Iranians will look to as they decide which way they're going to go now. What they're trying to accomplish, I believe, is what I would call the Goldilocks solution. Not too cold, not too hot, and something that's just right. Not too hot, they don't want to do something that might elicit a regional-wide war that could stretch from the shores of the Mediterranean all the way over to the eastern border with Afghanistan. Number two, they don't want to be too cold and do something that's so insignificant, like you suggested back in April, where their attack was largely thwarted, but they look a little bit silly and are really embarrassed because, you know, this is a response to an attack which occurred in Tehran 12 hours after the inauguration of their new president. And the guy they killed, the Israelis, was a special guest of the new Iranian president. So they want it somewhere in between that. Secondly, it'll be different because it'll probably also involve other members of the axis of resistance who were not directly involved the last time, most notably Hezbollah in Lebanon, because the Israelis also assassinated a senior military leader of Hezbollah a few hours prior to killing Haniyeh in Tehran. And as a consequence, Hezbollah will likely be involved. You could also see involvement by militia groups controlled by Iran in Syria as well as in Iraq. You could see additional attacks on the West Bank by groups supporting Hamas there. Obviously, Hamas itself could do some limited responses in the Gaza Strip. And last but not least, the Houthis down in Yemen have also announced, of course, support for Palestine. Indians have been launching missiles, and they could be involved in a more coordinated attack. And whether that's one big attack or a phased attack by different members of the group, I think that remains to be seen.
And then very quickly, Jeff, the USS Abraham Lincoln arriving in the region, making way to the Middle East right now. And also, it's kind of rare for the U.S. to say this, that the missile submarine, the USS Georgia, also being sent to the Middle East. And what's the message being sent there above and beyond Uncle Sam is watching?
Uncle Sam is there to, as we did the last time, help defend Israel from an attack. And it was largely U.S. cooperation with other allies, the Brits and actually people like the Jordanians, that frustrated that attack by Iran back in April. So, A, we've got a large force there. We want you to know we have a large force there. We are going to thwart your attack. And, oh, by the way, you don't want to mess with us because the response would be devastating. Secondly, you got to keep in mind as well, we have forces in the eastern Mediterranean because there's about 90,000 Americans who live in Lebanon. And should this war expand into Lebanon physically on the ground, we might see those forces evacuating Americans as we did back in 2006 when Hezbollah and Israel got into a direct conflict.
Jeff McCausland, CBS Radio National Security Consultant, thank you for joining us today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.